Field posted its best rally in over a year, erasing months of losses in just 2 weeks. Welcome back, everyone. Your host, Chris Waltzek, here with you. Well, remember us? Gold Seek? Yes, we're still here after over 9 years. Many of our listeners this weekend are undoubtedly tuning back in after a long hiatus just to find out what's going on with the precious metals markets. Well, here's the big news. We may have just found a bottom. After topping in September of 2011, over 3 years later, very positive signs emerged this week. Despite rumors of its demise, the gold market may have just been resurrected. Mr. Market was very unkind to gold shorts this week, and it couldn't have happened to a nicer bunch of folks. This week's big show includes David Gurwitz from Nenner Research. He expects bonds to outperform equities, but of course he also likes the precious metals. Charles Nenner's long-term forecast at Nenner Research is back to previous bull market highs. Their target for this year, $14.50. That's one of the best targets I've heard in a while, and that's about 20% from recent lows. And they think crude oil is reaching a key nadir that could lift the price to $70, and if it surpasses that, back up to $120. Then Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, is buying gold and silver. He likes these discounted prices. He's bracing, though, for a long-term capital-style moment. He's a self-described bear and holds no paper assets, he says. He doesn't like stocks. He doesn't like bonds. If it's paper, no thank you. Give him something tangible he can hold in his hand. He remains a staunch believer in hard assets. And then Robert Ian interjects his latest editorial, Must Hear, wrapping up the show. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market recap. Visibility was virtually unlimited this week over the precious metals exchange, despite news of yet another record high in the U.S. dollar. It finished at a 12-year record once again. At Friday's closing bell on the New York COMEX exchange, gold was up $57, almost 5%, finishing at $1,280. Silver added $1.26, almost 8%, within earshot of $18, closing at $17.78 an ounce. The XAU Gold and Silver Equities Index closed at the highest level in 12 weeks, up 4%. And West Texas Intermediate Crude added almost a dollar, up about 1.5% for the week, ending at $48.91 per barrel. Well, gold prices extended the rally on Friday. The metal finished at the best level since August of last year amid currency market upheaval around the globe. Just as traders were digesting that ruble implosion that was triggered by the crude oil market, and Greg Hunter pointed out that the powers that be are claiming some responsibility that they may have orchestrated the oil sell-off to punish Russia for its incursion into the Ukraine. Well, gold, as you may remember, blasted higher in just a few weeks in terms of rubles by over 100%. This week, the Swiss National Bank rocked the markets by unpegging the Swiss franc from the euro currency. The Swiss National Bank unexpectedly tossed out a 3-year policy of euro pegging to their currency just 1 week ahead of the upcoming European policymaker meeting. Well, this was good news for the yellow metal. Assets in the Spider Gold Trust, the biggest gold ETF, climbed by the most since August of 2011. The trust climbed 1.4% to 717 metric tons on January 15th. Holdings in global ETFs climbed 12.5 tons. That's the best since September 2012. The metal climbed above its 200-day moving average for the first time since last September. And gold has risen 7% this year on increased geopolitical uncertainty, and market volatility seems to have the Fed's hands tied regarding rate hikes. The Fed Chair Janet Yellen at the last FOMC meeting that the central bank is not likely to raise rates before late April of this year. The soaring bond market has also put downward pressure on rates, which improves investor appetite for metals, which generally yield little interest. And that's also a big plus for my Alpha Stock subscribers. Our recent portfolios have benefited well from our TLT investment. According to an HSBC Securities report, demand for the metal will remain robust all year long on increased consumption from Asian nations. Precious metals bottom line. This week resulted in several highly bullish technical developments. Firstly, Gold closed above the 200-day moving average, and this is a closely watched metric by many investment professionals. So they're watching it closely, and that means we need to as well. Another bullish sign, gold retested that 1,200 level for over a year and a half, and it held on three major assaults and many, many minor assaults. As our good friend Jim Sinclair over at JS Mindset likes to point out, three attempts usually is what it takes to know whether or not something will hold or break. And I like the fact they really did everything they could and consolidated at 1,200, and still it held firm. They had every opportunity, the bears, to just maul these markets and honestly take it down to 1,900, 800, even lower. It just backfired on. Okay, so we're not out of the woods. We're not back in a long-term bull market just yet, but these are very positive signs. In addition, the metal is soaring in tandem with the U.S. dollar, its nemesis. So I hope you'll log into your Alpha Stocks newsletter account on Monday for important gold market updates and the forecast for 2015. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, clouds appeared over the New York Stock Exchange for the second week running. The Dow lost 225 points, 0.5%, ending at 17,511. The S&P 500 was off about 25, 1.25%, finishing at 2019. And the NASDAQ was down about 70 points, 1.5%, at 46.34. Driving the markets this week, U.S. retail sales dropped precipitously in the latest government report, the sharpest decline in a year. Plus, according to the Labor Department, unemployment applications soared to a four-month high, catching economists off guard. The sum total suggests sluggish economic activity, which could forestall Fed rate hikes. More important, though, I think, to U.S. equities, fewer jobs and sluggish sales dampens earnings prospects, and I think the markets have already factored in perfection. There's not as much wiggle room ahead for bad news. Domestic inflation figures also fell by the biggest clip in over 5 years, suggesting that air is leaking from the economic tires, making shares somewhat less attractive after 2 years of back-to-back double-digit gains. Bottom line on Wall Street. Well, our seven indicator sentiment composite remains in the fearful zone this week, but no panic selling has yet emerged. For the rest of this report and next week's forecast, plus the five new stock candidates in portfolio, please log into your Alpha Stocks newsletter account. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio with Rich Dad, Robert Kiyosaki, and David Gerwitz from Charles Nenner Research. We'd like for you to stay with us right here. Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
David Gerwitz, Managing Director at Charles Nenner Research. It's 2015, and he's got all kinds of topicality for us today. Welcome back, David.
My pleasure, Mike, always, really. I look forward to speaking with you. I get ready for it. There's a lot going on, as we see, so I want to hit all the markets. So let me start with a lot of different areas, and let me tell you what we call. We're going to talk stocks, bonds, commodities, and currencies, and we're also going to talk economic indicators, because the cycles also cover that. We did a whole piece on Sunday on deflation, and I would like your listeners to write in to our site and say, I'd like to read it. We showed, well, I might as well start with that. We showed charts on unemployment going back half a century, on ISM, Institute of Supply Management, which is a survey of 300 manufacturing firms on employment, inventories, orders, and deliveries. We did non-farm payroll, and we did consumer price index. and I'll read to you what the results say, but everyone should write in and see the charts. They're fascinating. Unemployment cycle is going back to the mid-century or bottoming soon, meaning less job growth, meaning more unemployment. ISM actually is up until July, and we actually see the stock market with a negative move here, bouncing up into April, May, and then that's it for the whole year. It's going to be down after that. I'm giving you a big picture, and then we'll go granular as we come back. Non-farm payrolls have topped and bottomed in a year and a half. So that's the other side of unemployment. Unemployment is how many people out of work. Payrolls, how many people working. Not working have bottomed. That makes sense. Like, we also think about what the program tells us. You know, we made a program and it says stuff. We have to think about it also. As you and I know, when we think about math, it's supposed to tell us something.
You have to interpret it, right?
We try. Well, I tell you, that's a good question, how we try not to interpret what we do, because it shows intelligence is knowing what you don't know also. And we're not that smart to say because crude's doing this.
That's one of the interesting thing about complex systems, isn't it? You have to make an interesting assumption that I think most of the scientific community is starting to grapple with today. And that is, look, we can't know everything. When you accept that fact, that the complex system is beyond our realm of understanding, well, maybe there are indicators that will give us hints.
That is exactly right. Listen, not to sound like a religious fanatic, but if God created our brains are human brains and not his. So therefore, we do the best we can. We come up with a system. Our system is 50,000 lines of code. We tell three sets of programmers. We actually have three different systems to do it. Same idea, but we figured if we would paint it with different programmers and they all do their stuff and it all lines up the same way, the odds are, however we messed it up in each way, seems to work. That's just in the cycle system. And then we do a target system. We do a point and figure system. We do a Elliott wave system. We do a candlestick system. We have all this stuff, and we hope it all lines up. Let's hold that off to the end until we have time. Maybe we'll do the next show. Let's talk about the different ways the technical analysis works, because that's not a bad conversation to have on its own. And then what we do differently, we think, is that we add the cycle and the target, because that's something other people try. I don't think they do it as well as us. Obviously, I know we have thousands of clients, so they think we're doing something right. But it's the other stuff is great, and the key is to put it all together. I make an analogy: when someone goes to a doctor, they hurt their foot. Is it sprained? The ankle, fractured, broken, bruised? The doctor takes a lot of X-rays, and he looks at them and decides. Charles is a doctor, and his attitude is, let me look at a lot of X-rays. And after looking at all of them, he has to scratch his head and figure, do all the X-rays point to this or point to that? That's kind of what we do, which tries to remove the emotion that we see in the market. You know, yesterday started to go up, and we knew, we said, buy the VIX, because it's going to be volatility. Look at today. In the last hour, VIX went up 5 points. Our system showed it. We don't know why. We actually, you know, so anyway, I'm hitting a lot of stuff at once. Let me step back. So the economic indicators indicate not such a pretty picture. Okay, that's one category of cycles called economic indicators. Then we have stocks, bonds, commodities, and currencies. And what I'd like to do is kind of go through each one and read you some of the stuff we sent out today. And as always, you listeners, I always recommend, please write to the site. Charles and Inter Research say that you heard me talking to Mike, and they should, you get a free sample of the research, which goes out Monday, Wednesday, Friday, covering 11 areas, and I'll say in a second. And then we have Sunday, we do a lot of chart work, and we try within a month cover the whole world, and you get an idea of what we see going on, whatever, you know, right or wrong. So anyway, so just today, the 10-year, let's talk bonds, okay? We have a target, the TLT, we bought it. We don't buy. We don't manage money. We recommend buying it when it was 109. It got to 130. We still think it goes to 137. That's the bond fund. So that we're talking bonds. So still rates are down, right? And we have a short-term target of the 10-year at 130, 150. Someone asked a question, for instance, is a 10-year bond future known as ZN? What is the target there that corresponds to the 138 TLT target? okay, and that we kind of answer the VIX just went up 5%. And, you know, some people, I think everyone should really focus on the VIX.
When we're talking VIX, we're talking about volatility index. It tends to be negatively correlated with the market. So when the VIX goes up, the market, the stock market is generally dropping, just a measure of overall volatility. Some people look to it as a fear indicator in the market. People are getting nervous. Also, I'd like to throw in here that the TLT is a regular recommendation. In fact, I've been recommending it for some time to my subscribers. And that's just your 20-year, I believe it is, long bond. So you get a little higher interest rate there. And people are kind of have a tendency to flee to it, negatively correlated with the stock market.
Yeah. Now, longer term, we think bonds are down. As we've discussed, I'll just quickly say that we can end the bond discussion. But rates 60 years ago were what they are now. 30 years ago, they were 18%, and now they're 2. And 60 years ago, they were 2. Therefore, that is a cycle from one bottom to another that was completely repetitive over a time. That's how we define cycles. It's not just the presidential cycle. It's not one cycle. What we do uniquely is to look back to find many cycles in any data series and see when they all top or bottom. And it's not easy. Obviously, we called the IBM top 6-7 weeks ago. We called the crude top at 97.
We have heard now from numerous media sources and outlets that the crude oil collapse was unpredictable. There's hundreds of billions of dollars in notional derivatives tied to this, and it could have an unbelievably nefarious impact on the global economy, especially the domestic U.S., because the heartland is filled with shale and fracking projects.
Step back 5 years ago, everyone should go to the site and watch Charles on this show called, I think it's CNBC, I'm not sure, I'm only kidding. Where he was there and crude was 147. I think we just have I think the real issue is memory. Crude was 147. It used to be 9. It got to 147. Charles was sitting and he goes, it's topping. We're going to have deflation. And everybody couldn't believe it because at the time crude had gone to 147, just like 3 years ago. Some other asset got to 1900. You've heard of called gold after 11 years up. And we said, it's time to get out. Why? We don't know. Cycles are topping. So the answer to your question is cycles are the answer. And people don't want to accept that patterns from the past repeat, so that something that happened 50 years ago, if it happened 40, 30, 20, and 10, and then the same thing every 5 and every 2, and they all line up now, which is what happened with crude, it was a top. It doesn't mean level is the same, because think about it, all those tops occurred at different levels. So by definition, to calculate level is a whole nother world, as you and I have talked about. And we do it based on quantum physics and the decay in the trajectory of shooting a bullet out of a gun, because we actually assume, as crazily as it is. So the answer is, if it's happening in the world, why is it not happening in market? And that's our assumption. Until you prove me wrong, that's the assumption. That seems to be how we're able to predict targets that we have no idea why it happened. Fed funds, he called from 6 to 0. How could that be? He said he was shocked that the system would do it. So anyway, crude topped based on long-term cycles. We have cycles going back 100 and some odd years because that's all we have crude. We don't have crude 500 years. They didn't start drilling, right? So we have that, and it was a top, and we called it at 97. Our first target down, believe it or not, was 65. It got to 65. Also, the system doesn't call everything in one shot. You know, football team, football, right? I'm also, you don't move up the field in one pass. You pass, you get a touchdown, you get 10 yards, you get a first down, you go again. Our system works the same way. That's what technical analysis is. It gets to a spot and it revamps. So crude, believe it or not, we actually had a target of 120, right? Assuming. Then it got knocked down here. And so we have a $50 target, then a 60, then a 70. If it gets past 70, we're going to go to 120. I don't know if it'll get past 70. We're not sure. We're happy to admit that. We're not sure, but the fact we called the top means the system's telling us something. And right now, we think it's going to bounce, and we did call the top. And then to say why something happened, I don't believe anybody could ever say that, including us. We don't know why something happened, but you are completely correct that what's happening in the world because of this is going to destroy a bunch of hedge funds. You got Russia in a complete turmoil. It's something that, who could plan this? Not a shot is fired, and yet you've got this knockdown. Now, war cycles have bottomed, and so we do predict. Here's where a trying to put the pieces together, which we admit we're not so good at. If wars keep going up and they blow, someone blows up, you know, and therefore that could cause crude to go up. 6 years ago, Michael, when crude, when the stock market in the summer of 2008 tanked, the beginning of 2009, Charles was on Bloomberg saying, and everyone was praying crude would go up because it would be an indication of economic activity. Now, I guess people are feeling the same way. Like, I want crude to go up because it'll mean something. But in one sense, nowadays, if it goes up so fast, people would say it's probably war. So we don't know how to say A implies B there. We just know cycles, meaning top to tops in any data series, called it, and we're expecting a bounce now.
If you think back to the last bottom there that occurred after the 2008 collapse, a few months before a really solid floor was in place. Don't you agree?
Yeah. It was in the 30s then, and then then we called it up into the 100 range. And so here's where we're holding, basically, according to us, who've called two major tops in crude. Not bad, right? We don't know. We don't know if it gets to the targets we go to. If it gets past 70, it's going to 120. What's going to cause that? What caused it to go from 100 to 50? I don't know. I mean, you could put all the reasons, but we think it's cycles. And that bothers people because it means we don't have free choice. And that bothers people. Everyone thinks they could figure out. I've told this story before, but I want to say it again. Nat gas, when it went from 12 to 6 5 years ago, everybody thought it was going to go back up, and we predicted it would go to 2. And it went to 2. And what happened was the Canadian banks lent the Western Canadian nat gas producers a lot of money when it was $6. And it went to $5. And it went to $4. And I guess, you know, you have a house that's underwater. Companies have loans underwater. Banks make loans to companies, and the value of the company goes way down below loan value. That's called underwater, too. So they have a meeting, go, we better get our money back. How do you get it back? Sell more of your product. So the Canadian banks forced the Western Canadian oil producers nat gas producers to pump more. Price kept coming down because the market got flooded. And the newspaper said, prices go down in that gas due to bank forced selling. And we think that's not true. We think cycles topped and the set of events happened that led to that. That's kind of the way everything works according to our system. Stocks also, last week cycles topped and bottomed, and so we called the top and bottom. We don't know why.
People hear, well, we don't know why. It turns a lot of people off, but there's a growing cadre of folks who recognize maybe it is the height of presumptuousness, it's the height of arrogance to think that we can know why in real time.
Exactly. Mike, I'll tell you the word for wisdom in Hebrew. I'll say it in, it's called chachma, right? And if you break it into two pieces, it's koachma, which means the power of a question. Wisdom means I'm asking, I don't know. And that's kind of what we think. I mean, Charles, no dummy. I mean, it's not one of the dumbest people walking around the world. He came up with this system by asking a question when his professor in medical school, I think I've said this before, but it's worth repeating, professor in medical school in 1980 said, people, there are more doctors put on during full moons because women give birth more often there. And that seems to make sense. A implies B. If you think about a full moon affecting women's birth cycles, that makes sense. Then a week later, he goes, people get admitted to insane asylums all around the world at the same time. And Charles, who knew nothing about the stock market, here's a guy that advised everyone at Goldman Sachs for 15 years. He knew nothing. He's in medical school. He said, why is that? Is it during a full moon? And maybe that explains it. The professor said, no. We don't know why people in Buenos Aires and people in Singapore and people in Helsinki get admitted to insane asylums at the same time. We know they do. Charles comes to New York. He watches Neil Cavuto on a show 30 years ago. At the beginning, there were no big news shows then. There wouldn't be a Gold Seek 30 years ago. There was no internet, right? So he's watching this guy say IBM top because of this. And Charles is pretty questioning. He goes, how do you know why it top? IBM top because earnings came. So he went to New York Library, and he saw old New York Wall Street Journal. He went back 10, 20, 30 years. He asked the librarian there, and by hand, he started calculating top to tops. He said, oh, they're all top, they're all bottoming now. That's why IBM's going up. And sure enough, that's how the business got started, by stumbling on based on A implied B. The professor said this, and then Neil Cavuto said that. And so that's how he came up with the system. So you think he's going to walk around saying, I figured it out? He stumbled on it. And it's the height, just like you say, it's a height of hubris to think that people could figure out why. Now, there's some brilliant people out there who see stuff. Some of these huge managers, there's some very brilliant people out there. And, you know, you look at some of these sovereign wealth funds. We have some of them as clients. They don't want to know anything other than what's going to happen 2 years from now. There's, you know, $200 billion, $100 billion. You know, a lot of it's been made with crude in Europe, there's a certain, in the Far East. And so it's the world doesn't want to accept, in our opinion, the fact that things repeat from the past. And now Keynes is a big thing. Keynes even saying you can't do quantitative easing when rates are 2%. It's like pushing against a rope. And that's something we wrote in our report. So I recommend everybody to write in and see what we wrote about on Sunday about that. So we really have a bit of a mess coming.
A little anecdote. Keynes, not the best trader in the world. His fortunes, you might say, gyrated like a pendulum. So maybe not the best forecaster.
Well, there was a guy named Gann. So we have part of our system uses Gann cycles.
I don't doubt it. Gann, a very interesting fellow. He was in the Midwest, and he amassed a huge fortune, came from dirt farmers, and amassed something like a $50 million fortune just trading using interesting cycles. You might say he squared the circle.
Literally, that's what he did. Again, this is another not-too-minute conversation we could have about how Gann works. I mean, we've studied it. I don't understand it. Charles says, I don't understand it. I mean, some people do. We somehow explained it to some programmers. It's incorporated into the system. It's one of the pieces we use. It's complicated stuff, you know, and it's not easy, but thank God it's usually right. So we're very grateful all the time. I know, you know, I was a ball player, you know, I was a big basketball, baseball player. And so the guys who played are still kids. You know, I'll be 60 this year, but I still feel like I'm 12. And every basketball court I drive by, I still want to go play. Even though I'm a musician, I don't play. So Charles will call me sometimes at 4:15. He goes, you see, you went right to the target. And I said, you're still 10 years old. You still think this is fun. And that's kind of why, you know, we like doing what we're doing, because it's still a game that's an unfinished painting.
I'd love to hear him speak, Charles Nenner, with Arch Crawford. Put out an awful lot of interesting research to understand why these cycles work. Arch, of course, believes that there is an astronomical component to this. His big philosophy, and I'll keep it brief, human emotions are affected by the ebb and flow of the solar wind, radiation that emanates from our star. And this solar flow, as you were alluding to earlier, the lunar cycles affecting lunacy, that's where we get our term lunacy, put out some interesting physics information.
By the way, just on that note, again, we agree that sunspots affect people's brains because it affects the water in our brains. Now, who wants to talk about this stuff other than you and me? Now, thank God people are listening to us. I hope they're cracking up when they hear this. Go, you know, these guys are nuts, but they're interesting, you know. But we're trying to put it down on helpful things such as the stock market, which we think after April is going to be a mess, and the bond market, which we think will continue to be strong, like we've called, and then that will also top, and then all of a sudden you scratch your head and go, if stocks are bad and bonds are bad, what am I going to do? And again, I've said this before, but it's worth repeating. Let's go to 1981. We're now 34 years later. Stock market was 1,000. I was just finished. I just graduated business school, NYU. Stock market was 1,000. It took off. It's now 18,000, 17 the Dow. The Dow's up 17 times in 34 years. Bonds were 18%, and now they're 2. So bonds have gone up in value, down in rates. So if you want to say they both can't go together, they did, right? Now, but they didn't always, because in 87, stocks decided to take a detour from 125th Street down to the bottom of Manhattan. Happened in 94, less so. Happened in 2000, happened 2000. I don't think it'll be the same thing this year, but it's certainly a 7-year cycle. Right into the site and get the research, because the answer is, no, the bottom line is it's going to be tempestuous, which is why, that's a good word, I haven't used that in a while, which is why the VIX is something people should get comfortable with. Also, the VIX is owned by the CBOE, Chicago Board, and that itself is a stock that people should consider buying. And yeah, because that's making a ton of money. That takes care of stocks. Now, not all stocks are going to go bad when things go bad, because there's certain drug stocks that are going to take off. We see the drug index not doing so poorly, and the food, longer term, corn is up, although it's topping now. We did a study last week, coffee. I think people should trade coffee, not just drink it, because we seem to call it right. And cocoa, coffee, we've been nailing for 4 years. Why? I have no idea. The VIX we've been nailing, and it's interesting, the VIX targets have been working better than the VIX cycles. Why? We don't know. But we're happy to say we don't know, but they work, right? So anyway, that takes care of stocks and bonds. And gold, we have not spoken about gold. So let me give you gold. The answer is, let me give you gold, we think... It's been on a bit of a buy signal here. We have two other targets. I'll give you in a second. We don't think it goes past 1450 this year, which would be good for people. I mean, I say good. If people bought it now, it wouldn't be such a bad trade. You know, we called the top 3 years ago. This bottom has started in July. We're now 6 months into a bottoming process, and we're just still not ready to take off yet. That's, you know, that's, because we thought it was taking off. We were wrong. But the good news is, when we're wrong, we have a stop in, and most of the time we're not in unless we feel comfortable. So we don't have the depressed feeling a lot of people have who are in losing positions, which is part of the reason why we like the cycle work. Stand aside unless you feel comfortable, which a lot of people, especially in Canada and Australia, do for gold and silver, because, you know, they believed in it. I'm not that smart. So our attitude is, if cycles are topping, get out. If they're bottoming, you can get in with a stop, and you don't have to worry. And you're not like you're losing money by not putting it in the bank, which I'm paying you anything now. So let me go a little more granular with the gold story. So I'll give you more details now. You people can listen, and you'll see what you would get in the research. Gold reached our upside short-term target at 1230. Yesterday was a short-term cycle top for gold, but the buy signal continues, and we can see 1245. As long as there's no close below 1214. The research is written mostly shorter term. Silver is on a buy signal near our upside target of 1710. Short-term cycles bottom put the stop loss up to 1625. So that's kind of the, and the longer picture, long, we think it goes back to its highs. So that's the good news. But shorter term, you're going to, deflation. You know, so that takes care of gold and silver. Copper, we wrote about today. Let me discuss copper, because that's something. So let me read you copper. We cover a lot of stuff. You know, we really do. Copper. I'm the editor, but I don't remember it. Copper, also called Dr. Copper, leading indicator for economic inflation and deflation. With all the excitement I put this in and concentration over falling crude prices, it's important to look further than crude to see that there's something more serious happening with the economy. We gave a sell signal for copper around 310. Since then, it never generated a buy. While shorter term cycles are close to a low, we can still see 235 before it bottoms in place, while a close above 277 is needed to cancel the sell signal. Sell signal doesn't mean go short. Buy signal doesn't mean go long. It just means don't be the other way. Then, depending on your trading abilities, you want to favor being long and favor being short, but sell signal is a whole other discussion, what that means. You know, if thousands of clients, so everybody has different abilities, different risk tolerances. So they just use our levels within other things they use as a kind of overlay to them. But copper also has been down. So now we haven't talked currencies, but, you know, I appreciate you giving me the floor. The euro is still under pressure, but we have a downside target of 116.75. I'm reading in today's research, and near a short-term cycle low, close above 119, needed to cancel. Longer term, we still think it goes back to 110. The dollar is topping. The DXY is topping. Yeah. Well, you and I have talked about this for a year and a half. We predicted Q2. Major top for the dollar. We called this 2 years ago.
Well, the irony is you are bumping up against the last resistance level. If you look at the monthly chart, it impacts a lot of different areas of people's and portfolios. And I've said, look, you know, we have seen an equally abrupt and steep climb for about, let's see, this is the third time now in 5 or 6 years. There's a precedent here.
Right. Although we go back further than that. because, like, we don't do Facebook because we don't have enough data. But on the dollar index, we go back, you know, many, many decades. Although the dollar index hasn't been along. Again, it's a complicated thing how we even do that. But let me keep reading the currencies we have so people can get an idea. The Aussie's sell signal, as long as there's no close above 82.50, we called the Aussie and the Canadian when they were 68 5 years ago to go to par, which they did. The Canadian, in order to see more strength, we need to close below $117 Canadian. And so now that crude has, we think, near a bottom, even if it may go down to 45, if the Canadian cycles are bottoming and crude cycles are bottoming, those are two good trades. Now, the commodity currency, quote unquote, that the Canadian is, again, it's not always the case, but generally is that if crude's going lower, the Canadian's lower. And if crude's going up, the Canadian's going up because there's so much, you know, crude pumped there. Now, you could say, you know, but can you say because so much oil's been pumped from America, that's the reason the dollar went up? It's too complicated. I mean, we, for some reason, Charles has discovered, which I think is amazing, price is all we use. We don't use all this other stuff. And that's something that we get yelled at all the time when we talk with all these techies about you need more data in this, and we go, price decides. This is tough stuff to think. And then I'll tell you, let me add one other thing. I have to leave in about 6 minutes. Let me just give you, I don't know how many of your listeners are American and non-American. Maybe you know, maybe you don't. So we have an awfully global client base. That's why I don't sleep. Because at night is the Far East and the morning's Europe and whatever. So Americans don't generally feel comfortable with currencies because what do they know? They know the dollar, right? So I'm always convincing the American people, like, the euro. You know, and how do I trade it? I don't really know it. And I always say, well, don't assume you know the other stuff, you know, because so that's one thing. People should always be thinking currencies as trades. This year in particular, it could be some of the best trades. Now, at night, did they go to sleep thinking I got 20% of my money on a currency trade? I mean, it's hard to go to sleep. And I understand the psychological piece of this is very debilitating, and that's why we think if cycles are being followed and they put stops in, they could sleep. So that's the overview. The Europeans think differently. The Far East think differently. The Brazilians think differently. The South Americans think differently. Even though we think everybody knows a lot of stuff, and then also I think there's information overload. I think the fact that screens are flashing all day in people, they don't think straight anymore. And then they have CNBC on, which, you know, okay, I don't have to say anything. It's not guiding your trading, your thinking. It's just information that I think people need to step back and really think a little more. And it's very hard. I'm noticing it over and over. People are feeling very pressured that they can't keep up with everything. And the answer is the pressure's off. You can't keep up with everything. So cut back on the amount of input from media. And like we think we're eliminating the noise by taking a historical perspective in every data series called stocks, bonds, commodities, and currencies. That's all we're doing. And we think, and it seems to be right. Lately, we've been very right. I mean, even the system is a system, so no system's going to be right all the time. By definition, it's human-based. But there are times it's better. We happen to be very hot in a lot of stuff. Now, I highly recommend people, you know, follow it. But, you know, that's kind of it. I think I'm done, you know. Right to the site, Charles and Nenner Research say we, you know, maybe we can help people avoid the trouble and avoid being on a bad trade. Much more important, you know, Charles is Dutch. Dutch have a mentality of you got to survive because their country's underwater. Yeah, he's explained this to me. People don't understand this. The wooden shoes come from the fact it's watery, so that you can't wear shoes in certain areas, otherwise the wet will just destroy your shoes. I never knew that. I'm a kid from the Bronx. What do I know about the Dutch? Other than they have a funny accent, you know, they used to own Manhattan.
Yeah, but did you know that Wall Street, the term Wall Street, comes from the Dutch settler?
Yeah, as he reminds me all the time. You know, we're still the ones that, I said, yeah, we ripped you off for $24, you know, or whatever it was, you know. That was the Indians. That was the Indians. That was before. So, you know, I deal with a lot of Dutch also. It's kind of funny to understand. But so that's a mentality of Dutch, is they don't want to lose because their country is underwater, literally, and they've had to build a whole embankment around it. And it's a flat country as well. So that's his mindset.
They're masters of land reclamation. The Army Corps of Engineers in New Orleans have learned quite a lot from the efforts in the Netherlands. Since we need to wrap up, tell our listeners more about Nenner Research, the services that you all provide, and how they can get in touch with you all to sign up if they'd like, or at least peruse some of the latest information.
Great. So Google Charles Nenner. There'll be a site that it will come, hit the site. It'll say, click here, I think. I don't even remember. And then it'll come into us, and we'll get on a list of people getting the update, which covers all the stuff we just talked about, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and charts on Sundays. We'll be in touch with the different subscription options. We have clients all over the world. We have all types of clients. We don't manage money, which really makes it much easier, because a lot of times we'll say don't do anything. Most managers don't think like that. They have assets, and they often feel forced to do stuff. I have a lot of broker clients who say their clients push them to do stuff. I think it's a mistake, you know, because if the clients are pushing them and then the brokerage house is pushing them, which they are pushed, they get conflicting signals there. A lot of times we say stand on the sidelines. So that's our point of view. But, you know, we have a lot of clients and they're happy with the service. And this is something Charles used to write at this place called Goldman Sachs. So I think it's pretty good. And I'm editing it, so I turn his Dutch English into a Bronx English, and hopefully it'll be, you've seen it, so you know what it's like, and I look forward to the next conversation we have about other types of technical analysis that I think people can at least hear and appreciate all the tools that we have to look at to come up with an amalgam so that we can decide based on everything the most likely forecast for each particular area, stock, bond, commodity.
Look forward to hearing from you as well as Charles Nenner.
Okay, fantastic.
Robert Kiyosaki, author of the Rich Dad series, joins us again in one of the first shows of 2015. Welcome back.
Hey, thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Jump right into the markets. 2014 was an unusual year. I think it caught a lot of people off guard, you might agree. Stocks were the investment du jour. What surprises do you see for investors this year?
It's a good question. I don't like to predict things, you know, because it gets messy and then I have to be always on it. So I just do like everything else. I just look at a long-term trend of the market a bit with it. So I'm actually, it's like with oil, I have a degree in oil. And I made so much money in oil, it was incredible. But I don't make money in oil, I make money in tax breaks. If I invest in, not in Exxon or Chevron, I used to work for Chevron, but if I invest in, let's say, oil play, I put $1 million in, I get $800,000 back. So who cares what the price of oil is? And I think that's really where financial education and financial intelligence comes in. Now, the tragedy of oil is this. It's really good for the consumer, but it's bad for the economy. And the reason I say that is I think the consumer is going to save $100 billion, let's say, you know, next year, this year. But the rich guys will lose $2 trillion every month. Now, for those of you who don't care about the rich guys, but when the rich guys start losing $2 trillion a month, they start firing people. They stop buying the big hotels, and the economy actually slows at the top. So while it's good for the consumer, on the other side of the coin is the rich. So next year, I get less income, per se, but I've already got tax breaks. And really, that's what financial education is. You know, all coins have three sides, heads, tails, and the edge of the coin. And your job is to look at both sides, stand on the edge, which is the intelligent thing to do. So that's what's happening with oil.
Do you buy the general consensus that seems to be floating around that when oil goes down sharply, we could see a slowdown, not just in the economy, but an implosion in things like paper assets, the stock market, because we did see something similar in 2008?
Not only that, you might have another, you know, we call that the Russian ruble default, which is possible. And that was long-term capital LTCM, long-term capital management. And that was a massive, massive collapse. And so people are saying it's because Saudi Arabia wants to take it to Russia and to Syria. And I don't know if it's that or not, but the facts are that with oil at such low prices, Russia, Venezuela, and certain countries will go bust. Now, that's not good. You know, because that goes for political and military instability. So the consumer wins, but I think the low price of oil could be the light at the end of the tunnel as an oncoming train.
You know, another component to this economic story, real estate is just red hot right now, breaking out to new highs. The Philadelphia index there for real estate out of a two-year consolidation. Typical American just can't get enough of this. Or is it really just the big institutions buying up foreclosures and building up their balance sheets?
Well, I'm not an expert at that side of it, but I think the big institutions already bought. They started buying in 2008. And I think the consumer is late right now, but at these interest rates, that's good. I think the point I'd like to make, Chris, is this, is that when the market was coming down in 2000, 2008, 2009, that's when I was buying. And my partners and I bought over $500 million worth of bad real estate. And we bought it at 5% interest. And then just last month in December, we refinanced $500 million at 5% down to 3%. And that's the real play. It's an interest rate play. And on top of that, we pay no tax when it's borrowed money. So that's really from the debt side of the play. That's how it's played. It's not real estate. It's debt and taxes. You know, the Fed and all those guys gave us $500 million to buy real estate. But the poor middle class didn't get much.
But what about the typical listener who doesn't have access to resources and that type of specialized knowledge? Do you like real estate investments for them for 2015?
I like debt and taxes. And if you understand debt and taxes, that's what the rich invest in. If I may be so commercial, I'm just launching my latest book called A Second Chance. It came out in January this year. And it kind of explains why the rich are getting richer, but also explains why the poor middle class are getting poorer. And a point of view inside A Second Chance is that it's a lack of financial education in schools. So as you know, my poor dad was the head of education, and my rich dad was a man who never finished high school, but he had financial education. So in my perspective, since I sell education, obviously, I think the key to any of your listeners' success is to question the education that has been crammed into their brains. Because even if you're a PhD at Harvard, you still haven't had much financial education. Now, the good news is, you know, financial education is available, but the student must be ready to make changes in their mindset, their values, and how they look at markets. And I'll say it again, you know, when I invest in oil and gas and real estate and businesses, it is fundamentally a play on taxes, interest rates. In other words, taxes and debt make me rich. Debt and taxes makes the poor middle class poor. And that's the three sides to a coin, heads, tails, and edge of the coin. When you read Second Chance, you can see both sides of the coin, and you can say, what do I need to get educated in? And that's really that's the rich dad position on everything.
Very good. But you know, the 2008 lows for the stock market, U.S. stocks and equities, shares have just skyrocketed now for going on 5 years. And there really isn't, I think, a lot of reason to think that we won't see at least some higher prices. Seems as though John Q. Public doesn't want to take a chance on U.S. stocks, despite the fact we've seen, you know, over a 100% advance in just a few years.
Well, that's actually not a bad idea. So I have zero stock market. And the reason is because when you chase stocks, you're investing for capital gains. And I invest for cash flow, debt, and taxes. So my philosophy is different. It also makes no sense. You should have been buying stocks in 2009, not 2015. And that's the difference. The other difference is when you look at cross currents, this is a very significant financial markets reporting system. Again, because of quantitative easing, the reason the stock market is so high is because people are getting no returns in their savings, you know, 0% interest rate, again, is debt and taxes. And the only place they can make money is in the stock market. So when you look at the charts on debt in the stock market or margins per se, debt in the stock market in 2015 is at an all-time high. Now, so if you were in at 2009, you did really good. The problem is here is what happens if, let's say, Al-Qaeda hits or does something. The big money will be coming out of the stock market at, you know, split-second speed with high-frequency trading and all that. If you don't know what you're doing, it's best to stand by the side. That's my position. It was invest for the long term. You got to be nuts to invest for the long term when the stock market's an all-time high, because I make more money when it comes down, and that's what professional guys do.
Because they come down, what, about three times faster than they rise?
You know what the old saying is, right? The bull goes up the stairs and the bear goes out the window. And I'm a big, fat, fairy bear, and I fall fast. You know what I mean? So
you're pretty much like the big plunger, Jesse Livermore type, who likes to see the fast moves on the downside, contrarian all the way, you know, doesn't buy the mantra on the street or on Main Street or Wall Street. You're probably waiting for the typical, you know, signs that you see of a top, where you hear the grocery clerk talking about how much money you just made trading Apple or Tesla shares, or how about a Time magazine cover, bull market here in perpetuity.
Chris, amen, amen, amen. If your listeners will understand that the best time to get rich is when it crashes. You know, let me say it this way, okay? Let's say I'm shopping at Saks Fifth Avenue, and they made this announcement. Saks says, we're going to double prices this week. Well, nobody would go shop with them. If Saks said, hey, we're going to discount everything, you know, 50%, then every consumer would run in. You know what I mean? Because prices are low. But for some reason in financial markets, and when they have a sale, they get out. So that's the difference between an investor and a consumer. And I would say 95% of most people are consumers, not investors. So they're happy when prices are high, whereas a consumer is, and a professional investor is happy when prices are low. And that's the difference.
What areas do you think are going to present some opportunity in 2015?
You can hear what I'm saying. The reason I talk to Gold Seek is I'm not paper seek. If you can print it on paper, I don't trust it. That includes the U.S. dollar, the yen, the euro. I don't trust them. So I'm pretty much a hard asset guy. When I look at what's going on, you know, for people who say, are you investing in gold or silver? I do not invest in gold and silver in the normal sense. In other words, people say, well, is the price of gold going to go up or the price of gold going to go down? That I don't buy gold and silver as an investment. I buy gold and silver as an insurance policy, so that every time, like right now, I'm buying gold and silver again because of like $1,217 or something like that. I think the euro is going to collapse. That's what the economist said. So that means when the euro collapses, the dollar will get stronger, but that means the gold gets weaker, so it's a borrowed opportunity again. So the whole point here is this: gold and silver are not investments. They're like buying auto insurance or life insurance. That's all it is.
It's a home insurance policy or a flood insurance policy. And, you know, one of the, I think, more interesting aspects is that most of my insiders here in the industry are starting to talk about silver and its cost of production somewhere between $20 and $23 an ounce. You can pick it up around $16, $17. Talk about contrarian investing, how all of the world's greatest investors go against the herd. They bet against the crowd. Well, what a better time than to buy an asset at less than the cost to produce it?
Yeah, all of this is insurance policy, because when they have quantitative easing, i.e. printing money, I like gold and silver because I trust them versus the banks.
You don't trust the Fed. And when they say, hey, we're done with QE, we've pulled the plug on that, we're going to even maybe raise rates in 2015, you think they're bluffing?
It doesn't make any difference. I said it earlier. So when gold and silver are kind of bouncing right now, what I think near comes again, that's smart. I'll say it earlier, that, you know, in the consumer market, when prices are high, the consumers get out. But when Saks has a sale, they think it's bad. You know what I mean? But when the financial markets are having a sale, the consumer thinks that's bad. And you make more money when things are bad, not when things are good. So if your listener can hear that, then they can say, oh, so just because the stock market's high and the Fed's doing it, it's not good news to me, it's bad news. But when all of it crashes, and what they say when there's blood on the streets, I go, oh, thank you. The markets are having a sale. That's when you get rich, not when they're high.
So, you know, when we talk about opportunity, though, in the metals, this is going to take a while. However, in terms of rubles, in less than 2 months, gold doubled because of the oil crash.
It's been my rich dad's theme for years. The whole point here is this, okay? If you saw The Economist, which is a fairly reputable magazine, October 25th, I believe, 2014, it said, quote unquote, the euro will collapse. If I was living in, let's say, Spain, I'd be buying gold today. But no, they're trying to save euro. You know what I mean? It's really ridiculous. So that when the euro collapses, the dollar's going to get really, really strong, which is not good for gold buyers here. But, you know, I mean, so you just have to be aware of what's going on, because gold and silver, that's all they are. They're insurance policies. I don't care if the price goes up or down. I'm just betting that somebody's going to do something for the next 5 years, be it an Al-Qaeda attack or something like that, and then the dollar will collapse, and then I'll have something to spend. This has happened throughout history. It happened in the Weimar Republic. It happened in Zimbabwe. It's happened in Yugoslavia. And the U.S., I believe, in the next 20 years, that has to happen. So I just keep buying. Every time gold or silver drop in price, I buy a little bit more, and I'm happy. But when the price is high, I'm not happy because I'm not buying. And that's not contrarian. To me, it's being smart. And like I said, if Saks Fifth Avenue is having a sale, I'm buying. When the gold market's having a sale, I'm buying. That's intelligent to me.
So you could see a moment then where the public gets all excited about stocks again, and here we go, you know, the year 2000, dot-com implosion all over again.
Well, again, I'll plug my book. It's called A Second Chance. And what you're talking about is, for those of you who really want to get rich, your second chance will come up when the markets collapse. But if you're hoping the markets stay up, then you'll probably never get rich because you're buying at the highest prices possible. So all I'm saying here is this. My poor dad was poor, and my rich dad was rich because he took real estate courses. So that's kind of the differences between philosophies and ideas. But as you know, most school teachers are not financial geniuses. So that's really my whole shtick of the rich dad company, is you got to be careful who you take financial advice from. You know, I don't trust financial planners at all, because all they can do is sell me paper. I want guys who sell me hard assets, like gold, silver, oil, real estate, businesses, food. You know, that's what I want. So I'm a hard assets guy. If you can print it, why would you buy it?
Any other words of wisdom you want to share with our listeners today to help them navigate their way through 2015?
You want to listen to Gold Seek Radio, because everybody is printing money. Never has been so much money been printed, including the U.S. Japan is printing the biggest. The British are, Euro going to start printing, and Germans are printing. Why would you save money? You know, why would you not buy real estate when interest rates are at 0%? I mean, I borrowed $500 billion at 5%, and then they renegotiated down to 3%. That has made me so much richer. So I'll say it again, the last thing. I invest for taxes and debt. That's what makes me rich. I love it when markets are low, and I'm happy when markets are high, because it doesn't make any difference. If you haven't made money so far, just wait, because it's coming up again.
Well, we all need second chances, and be sure and pick up a copy at least at Amazon.com. Get on the list there and pick up A Second Chance by Robert Kiyosaki. Thank you, and wish you a profitable and safe year ahead in 2015.
Yeah, and keep up at work, because you're probably the most important voice of sanity right now.
Well, that's kind of you.
My first interview on Second Chance, they took me off the air. They did not like what I was saying.
You know, what was it Oscar Wilde said? If you tell people the truth, you better make them laugh first, or you know what they'll do to you.
I need to remember that advice. That was probably the best lesson I've had all day, so thank you. I'll make people laugh as they're cringing. Thank you, Chris.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources, containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.